This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. It could come any time between now and Monday, the Pentagon's latest list of suggested military base closures. BRAC, or Base Realignment and Closure, as this process is known, is causing a good deal of anxiety here in North Carolina. There are 5 military bases in the state, 2 of the nation's largest, Fort Bragg and Camp Lejeune. Combined, the state's military operations house 100,000 servicemen and women, many of whom live, shop, and buy homes in surrounding towns. The bases also provide jobs for thousands of civilians. And so today, we're talking about North Carolina's close relationship with the military, both economically and culturally. And we're considering what it would mean if any of North Carolina's military operations show up on this week's BRAC announcement, its list of suggested base closures. We'd like to hear from you this hour. The number's 1-877-962-9862. That's 1-877-962-9862. Do you live on or near a military base, or have you? Are you awaiting the BRAC list with some concern about your own job? Or, on the other hand, would you be happy to hear that those fighter jets and training exercises could be sent elsewhere? Joining us right now from Raleigh is North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Beverly Perdue. She has led the state's effort to present North Carolina as military-friendly and keep all the operations here. And we welcome Lieutenant Governor Beverly Perdue. Thanks for being with us today.
Glad to be here, Melinda. Thanks for talking about BRAC and our military bases.
Right. Well, the state has taken steps to be perceived as more friendly to the military and military families. Why is the state making this such a marketing effort right now?
Well, the state understands, and the citizens across the state understand, that the military is a huge piece of our economy. About $18 billion, 350,000 civilian jobs, Melinda, and it doesn't just impact eastern North Carolina, which happens to be the site of the location of the bases. The military belongs to all of us, and we are doing a really good job of participating in that ownership county by county.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have been quoted as saying that North Carolina is America's military base, and North Carolina is a poster child for how states should behave with the military. So how should states behave with the military in order to keep the military happy and keep all those bases here?
Well, you have to feel like the military belong to you, and they're part and parcel of the fabric of a community. And North Carolina has that long history of that kind of relationship in the hometowns of these bases, where there's no town and gown, if you will, separation. The military dependents are part of the social and public structure of a community, and the military folks themselves are the Sunday school teachers and the volunteers in the community, and we live as one, and that's the best thing you can do. And then the state has to do whatever it can do as a state to invest itself in ownership of the military through land acquisition, through school policy, through social and economic policy. And that's what North Carolina's done for years. That's why we are the most military-friendly state in America.
Now, when you speak of land acquisition as one of those examples, are we talking here about the state purchasing more land around the military bases so that they cannot be developed, so that down the road there can't be complaints from people who might live there about the noise or the activities going on?
Our capacity to expand in eastern North Carolina to accommodate the 21st century military and this whole concept of jointness is unique and on the East Coast, and actually uniquely almost to North Carolina for the whole country. We have this dominant amount of airspace and land that we can have further growth for military bases. There are some other states who have very little opportunity to expand. Oceana is a perfect example. When the base was built back 50 years ago, Norfolk and the community was fairly rural, fairly small, and now you have a huge metropolitan area adjoining a fairly large, sophisticated airfield and military base. The things don't go hand in glove anymore. So, yeah, that's what North Carolina has done very aggressively. We've led the country in setting aside public and private consortium dollars to purchase land around the base and in areas where the bases may need to train and to future develop the military. It's a great thing we've done, and we've done it like no other state in the country. That's why we are the poster child.
Now, when the Pentagon is considering which bases to close, how much does it take that friendliness of the state toward the military into account?
Now, I've been involved with BRAC twice before when I was in the General Assembly and the Senate, and this is the first time that I've ever seen in the data calls, that's the information the Defense Department asked for each military facility to provide. The data calls were very reflective about what the state and the community's relationship with not just the base itself, but with the military folks and their dependents, this military friendliness attitude or sense of community. And we have been strong on that. We're historically strong and have been for nearly 30 years. And the fact that our base facilities could tell the story of the co-joined ownership and communication of the military and the civilian community is a real asset. So I do believe that kind of bragging on political will lobbying makes a tremendous difference in how the commission and perhaps how Secretary Rumsfeld's been evaluating each state and each facility in its entirety.
I wonder if making the effort counts, or for this reason, because we are told that politics is not supposed to play a role in this. But there has to be politicking going on, to the mere fact of North Carolina trying to present itself, market itself, and I mean politic in a good sense of the word here. So I wonder what you think about this talk that no politics shall be involved in this round of base closings.
Well, that's always been said over and over since, again, I've been involved since the 90s, and politics is really as out of it as any process I've ever seen. The commission's work will be done in a fairly narrow vacuum or environment where any facility that is on the BRAC list for closure or realignment will be visited. There will be community hearings, but basically that's a tedious, hard process. This initial list that we're all waiting for to be released by Monday's the drop date, according to the statute, the only politics that could have happened is the fact that we've all gone in and out of Washington trying to sell the stories of our states. And it's been an interesting opportunity to do that. But I don't have any predisposition to think it made a difference. I've said that all along. I think what's made a difference is the fact that North Carolina has worked very aggressively to showcase the positive things that we do intrinsically, inherently, in this state and our local communities' relationships with the military. So we bragged on that, and I feel like we've done a good job of it.
Beverly Perdue, Lieutenant Governor for North Carolina, is with us. We are talking about the effort that she is leading here in North Carolina to present the state as being very military friendly. This in anticipation of the news expected within days of which military bases the Pentagon is suggesting for being closed. Joining us now on the line from Raleigh is Paul. Hi there, Paul. Did you have a question for the Lieutenant Governor?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I am concerned on a base closing mostly with the considerable civilian infrastructure that has been built in the Havelock and Goldsboro areas around these bases, particularly the school system, because there are so many students involved. I call them the schools, they're my customers. And there are so many of the students who are military dependents. And if they were to close the base, my question, I guess, is how adversely would that affect us? And can anything be done to compensate those cities for the empty schoolrooms they're going to have if that does happen? That's really what I'm concerned about.
Well, Paul, we're hoping that it doesn't happen, and I'm not going to cross that bridge until we know that it happens to North Carolina. The truth be told, though, other states have already gone through a closure process, and we do, in fact, have the example right near us of Charleston and how aggressively they've worked to develop and redevelop the property that was the military base. North Carolina's greatest assets are people. I don't have any doubt that we would figure out a way to reinvest in the community and pick up the slack, if you will. But I just pray that we don't have to make that decision or get into that plan on Monday. We'll talk then. You can be part of the fixing process if something bad happens.
Well, good luck.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for your call, Paul. 1-877-962-9862 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation. We're talking about the possibility of North Carolina being on a list for base closes of military base closures that the Pentagon is planning to release within coming days. Lieutenant Governor Beverly Perdue is with us. And Paul mentioned Goldsboro and Cherry Point. We have a number of military operations in the state. Fort Bragg and Camp Lejeune, I think, think by most people's understanding of the situation, are so big. They're among the three largest military installations in the country. They would seem not to be targets for base closure. But the conversation often turns to, what about Seymour Johnson Air Force Base in Goldsboro and the Marine Air Station at Havelock, at Cherry Point? Do you share those concerns about those two places being perhaps the most vulnerable right now?
I don't think they're any more vulnerable than any other facility in the country because of the capacity they have had to present their facts, and they really are quite excellent, both of them. So I know that we've all been very concerned. I'd be less than honest if I said I haven't worried about them. Surely I feel like Lejeune and Bragg will be fine because of the infrastructure and just the massive deployment they have now in both Iraq and Afghanistan. But if you look uniquely at the mission and the capacity of Seymour and Cherry Point to participate in this 21st century military that the Secretary describes so well, you know, he envisions a time, perhaps a long overdue time, if you're honest about it, in this country, where when folks end up fighting together, they should also end up training together and working together. And we can do that in North Carolina. So I think we're going to be fine.
We're talking with Lieutenant Governor Beverly Perdue about BRAC, which stands for Base Realignment and Closure, the process of shutting down military bases. We should be hearing within days whether North Carolina bases are on that list. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. If you want to join it, 1-877-962-9862 is the number. We look forward to your calls. Also a question, just how is the fight over the outlying landing field in Washington County affecting the BRAC and the base closure process? All that just ahead on The State of Things. Support for The State of Things comes from listeners who support North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. We're talking today about North Carolina's military bases and the Pentagon's upcoming list within days of which bases in the country it thinks should be closed or realigned. That list is known as BRAC, for Base Realignment and Closure, and it could affect North Carolina bases in some way or other. Some bases could lose their troops, others could gain. We're talking with North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Beverly Perdue, who is leading the state's effort to market North Carolina as military-friendly and so put off for a fifth time in this fifth round of base closings, having any of the operations here shut down. And joining us now is David Sorensen. He is a professor of international security at the Air War College in Alabama and author of Shutting Down the Cold War, The Politics of Military Base Closures. And David Sorensen is in the studios of Alabama Public Radio. Welcome, David.
Thank you very much.
Well, recently, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld has backed down from the Pentagon's earlier statement that they could close 20% of the nation's military bases. Now he says it would be a smaller number. Why that change?
Well, that's an interesting question. The stated reason is that the United States is preparing to bring as many as 20,000 troops back to the United States from overseas bases, particularly in Europe. And thus the needed infrastructure in the United States would be greater than he apparently anticipated. Now, why this came out a little more than a week before the BRAC list was announced is somewhat of a mystery. But it was apparently the recommendation of another independent commission headed up by Mr. Alton Cornella, who actually was on the 1995 BRAC commission. Whether or not there's a connection politically, it's just too hard to say.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've been talking with Lieutenant Governor Beverly Perdue about North Carolina presenting itself, bragging on what it has done in the past with the military. Does the military take into account what local communities have done, have to say?
What the military does is to take a list of factors for each base. And it's simply, as the Lieutenant Governor indicated, called the data call. The most important factor on that list is military value. And that means, is the base capable of more than one service mission? Is it multi-mission? Is it joint? What's the state of the infrastructure in the base? Is it new and modern, or is it old and decrepit? How close is the base to other bases so that it can facilitate joint use across the bases? And most importantly for this administration is the question of transformation. Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld has added this as a factor that was not in the previous BRAC criteria. The previous BRAC criteria emphasized simply saving money, and that was important. But this new set of criteria is also about transformation. So, for example, the kind of military the secretary wants is a lighter, leaner, less expensive military that's more easily transportable. And I think that's going to have some impact on North Carolina. Mm-hmm. But those are the factors that the BRAC Commission is required by statute to look at. And again, an attempt to try to minimize the political impact.
Okay. We go to the phones now. Worth joins us from Raleigh. Hi there, Worth.
Hello.
Hi. Did you have a question for our guest, David Sorensen, or Lieutenant Governor Beverly Perdue?
Yeah, in the spirit of the last answer, my concern is that there was rather strong and vocal opposition in eastern North Carolina to the outlying landing field, and I think that's still in debate or discussion. But I wonder how that will affect particularly the future of New River or Cherry Point air stations, because clearly that will be not so military-friendly, and I'm hoping it doesn't negatively affect it, but I wondered Secretary Perdue or the other guests would comment on that.
Well, Lieutenant Governor Beverly Perdue, the OLF is the landing field, as you know, that the Navy wants to put in Washington and Beaufort counties. A federal judge has put the brakes on that for now. There are people that don't want the loud jets making tens of thousands of touchdown landings, touch-and-go landings a year there. So I wonder how that plays into your effort to present North Carolina as military-friendly and saying, you know, don't close any of our bases now.
Well, the truth be told, the Navy, I think, appealed Monday to the Fourth Circuit, so the whole question is still unanswered, even though we thought it was on hold for a while. Both Secretary Dubois, two of the folks who work for the Pentagon and Secretary Rumsfeld, Dubois and Gromey, have told us that the OLF issue is not in play during the discussion of transformation and jointness that's going on and this BRAC. They have told us the issue that North Carolina it needed to present, and we've done a really good job of that, I believe, is on the outspace, the military airspace that's available, the MOA, if you will. And we have a fabulous dearth of airspace availability in the area of eastern North Carolina, those 43 counties where all of the bases happen to be housed. So I feel like that we are going to be fine and that the OLF will not enter into any kind of negative concerns about our state.
I wonder if it could cut both ways. On the one hand, the military could be punitive toward North Carolina because there'd been the resistance to the OLF. But on the other hand, the military might be inclined to keep the North Carolina bases open so as to eventually wear down the resistance to the OLF.
I don't know about that. I hope not. I think that what both sides are trying to do, the folks who are against it and the folks who are for it, is actually find the most likely, the best site for the practice field. You've got to practice if you're going to. You got to train to be good in the military. We all know that. Craven County and Carteret County have offered up alternatives. We hope they're considered. But again, I don't believe that the folks that I've worked with would mislead me in terms of the importance of the OLF in these decisions. What they are looking for, as Professor Sorensen just said, is this military of the future. And they did allow North Carolina to send in a supplemental memoranda. I think we may be the only state that was allowed to do that, where we presented a strategic plan where, as the military did transform itself across the world in this first part of the 21st century, that we have the capacity and the talent and the skills to do that here, along with the people and the land and the air.
Well, Lieutenant Governor Beverly Perdue, thank you for taking time out to talk with us today.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you, and I guess we'll all be talking either Friday or Monday again.
Indeed. Thank
Bye-bye.
You so much.
Thanks.
Beverly Perdue is North Carolina's Lieutenant Governor, and she's been leading the charge in the state to present North Carolina to the Pentagon as being military-friendly, and so to fend off the possibility of any of the military installations here being closed. We could be hearing as early as Friday, Monday at the very latest, which military bases in the country the Pentagon suggests be closed, and that's the start of a process that will go on for another few months. With us is David Sorensen, who is professor of international security at the Air War College in Alabama. He's also author of Shutting Down the Cold War, The Politics of Military Base Closures. And joining us now in the studio is Jay Price, who is a reporter for the Raleigh News and Observer, who's been following the proposed base closures. Welcome back, Jay.
Glad to be here.
Well, you've just written about Goldsboro where they have Seymour Johnson Air Force Base. How does Goldsboro appear to be bracing for what's coming on Friday?
Well, the story probably made them paranoid. They aren't happy to see themselves mentioned as even vaguely on any sort of hit list, and they're not. The security on this particular list has been pretty tight. I think a lot of journalists have been surprised that there haven't been any leaks. So, you know, we just have to go with what seems potentially to be, possible. And that's about it, possibility. There's no solid information out there that any of our bases are on any sort of hit list or any sort of list to gain anything. It's just there are two that seem the most obvious because the other two large bases seem almost invulnerable to any sort of closing. And actually, if you listen to state officials like Lieutenant Governor, they sound a relentlessly positive theme, and they think we're going to be adding things.
Mm-hmm. Now, there have been four other base closings in recent decades. North Carolina avoided the bullet those times, although Havelock, Cherry Point, was on a list at one point, but the state fought that off.
Yeah. They fear, in particular, one of the things that people have been placing a lot of emphasis on is those jobs at the Naval Air Depot down there where they fix aircraft that take off vertically, mostly helicopters, but also vertical takeoff jets, the Harrier. And you've got 4,000 jobs down there that pay, civilian jobs that pay nearly $50,000. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of really nice jobs for Eastern North Carolina. And that's what this is all about. As part of the state's effort to get a handle on what it's got going on here, it had a commissioned a study that was released in 2004 that indicated that the economic effect on the state of all these military bases is better than $18 billion. We know the number's pretty high. It's probably not exactly that.
Because that does include, we should say, some retirees.
Ripple effect,
benefits,
retirees, a lot of things like that. But nevertheless, that underlines the importance. That figure, if you look at gross state product, that figure puts it double at that point what tobacco was doing for us and triple what textiles were doing for us. And both of those things have probably faded even more since then.
Okay. Let's go to Alan, who joins us in Raleigh. Hi there, Alan.
Yeah, hi. How are you doing?
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. My question really did involve the depot and the air station. The air station and the depot, even though they're co-located in Cherry Point, have fundamentally different missions. The air station involves, you know, the combat act and the support activity. The depot is like a gigantic garage. It was pretty much close to what the shipyards were. And my question would be, given the president's management agenda, you know, privatization and what have you, wouldn't you believe that the depot would be particularly vulnerable to this BRAC because it's not going to be, it's not going to have the diversity of activities that the previous guests were speaking of, and because of the president's management agenda to privatize a lot of these activities, wouldn't they be particularly vulnerable? That would be my guess.
Yeah, for purposes of the list, this list is going to come out, I'm told, Friday. We'll see. I would consider those two different facilities. And, yeah, the depot is vulnerable in two different ways. It could be on that list, or, conversely, it could come up later for simple privatization under a kind of another mechanism.
But if it came up for privatization, you do have, 4,000 civilians working there now? Could one make the case that it stays there physically, it's operated by a private company instead of the military?
Yeah, that's possible. Anything's possible. A civilian company could come in and say, hey, we're going to run it the same way. Whether they would pay the same, who knows. Mm-hmm. But the other strong possibility would be that they would simply move it out of state to wherever their existing facilities are. If it's Bell Boeing or somebody like that, who knows where they would move it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so there would be a difference between the two. The depot there that has about the 4,000 civilian jobs, I understand that it could be vulnerable because there is another operation of that sort on the East Coast in Jacksonville, Florida, and the West Coast has but one, and there might be this desire by the military to have one on the East and one on the West Coast, and so...
But there also could be some swapping. There are a lot of, shall we say, large specialties. One depot may be particularly good at dealing with rotor blades, which are a lot more complex than you might think. Testing them is an amazing thing. They may move functions around where the functions make more sense rather than moving the depots. We don't have a lot of excess depot capacity, apparently, but That's another possibility as well.
We're talking about the potential for military base closures here in North Carolina. The Pentagon is expected to announce its list of proposed base closures as early as Friday. With us is Jay Price, reporter for the Raleigh News and Observer. David Sorensen is author of Shutting Down the Cold War, The Politics of Military Base Closures. David Sorensen, you've been watching these base closure procedures over the years. How is this one comparing to previous years? There is this talk about keeping politics out of the process, and I wonder if that's happening.
It's very hard to say right now because, as we heard from the lieutenant governor, every state and every district is making its case that it's got a more militarily friendly environment, better facilities, less land encroachment. And the question is whether or not those arguments are going to really affect the process. They're not supposed to. But we're already hearing rumors that the governor of California has managed to save a couple of facilities. Again, just rumors. But we really won't know until the commission releases this report and we get a chance to really look at the process at work. But remember, this is really the first round. The military releases its list and then the commission itself goes to work. And it will travel around to the different bases that are on the list. And then there's a second opportunity, if you will, to lobby the commissioners when they arrive at that base. And that's done by public appearances, public forum, in some cases even parades, as they did at the Naval Air Station in Meridian, Mississippi. But again, does this really impact on decisions that are really supposed to be made on objective criteria? And the military spent lots of effort in developing those criteria to reflect the defense secretary's wishes for a different, less costly military.
I don't mean to be cynical, but I just wonder if striking up the band and welcoming the nine commissioners with, some marching band music would do the trick then.
You've got to wonder. But remember, politicians have to be seen to be doing something. And that's what we elect them for, and that's what we expect. And so, in part, putting on a good show may or may not, in the end, save the base. But the governor or the senator can say, well, at least we tried, and here's what we did. Don't blame us.
And Jay Price?
I kind of liken the situation to a lottery in reverse. Whether politics is going to work even a little bit in this case, you don't know. But the stakes are so high that you've got to go ahead and pony up. Some of the local governments here, both in the Wayne County area around Seymour Johnson and down around Cherry Point, have ponied up hundreds of thousands of dollars. The ones down around Cherry Point have hired a former general who's a very, very sharp lawyer down there. And the state has got a couple lobbyists up in D.C. that are former Senate chiefs of staff on both sides of the aisle. And the stakes are simply so high that even though they don't seem to think we're up for a hit, they've got to cross all the T's. And as you say, they've also got to appear to be doing something. Lieutenant Governor, I don't know if whether she plans to run for a higher office or not, but has certainly got rave reviews for a performance on this, and it can't hurt her.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it would be silly. It would seem absolutely silly not to be prepared if we're talking about military here, and that's always being on the defense, right? To not try to do this, to just sit back and
well, if
let
we get
happen.
A if we get a hit, you don't want to be sitting on your thumbs.
Right. Let's go to Zach in Greensboro. Hi, Zach.
Hey, how are you?
Fine. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Did you have a question?
Yes, my question was earlier for Ms. Perdue, but what I was trying to get a hold of you about is, I know the base closures, but has there been any thought process in what we're going to do, environmentally speaking, if we do end up having to close a base because of maybe the fact that we have tons of environmental problems on military bases as it stands? Is there anybody looking at that kind of situation?
Jay Price?
We're poised. Actually, we've already talked to our environmental reporter about, pouncing if we get a closure. Again, we're not sure the chances are all that high, but we're already discussing that. Now, David may know of some situations in other places in the previous closing rounds that might illustrate how that can be a problem.
David Sorensen? David Sorensen? Hi.
Well, the environmental issue has been a big one. And in some cases, bases that were supposed to have closed 10 15 years ago has still not been able to convert because of environmental problems. The Naval Air Station in Alameda, California, closed in 93, and they have still finding environmental problems there. So it's a huge issue. And it is also a factor in the criteria for closure. It's down on the list, but the expected cost of environmental remediation are part of the considerations for both the military and the BRAC Commission. The problem is that once you close a base and you do that final survey, you find stuff that may have been buried 40 or 50 years ago and essentially lost. And so you've got a whole new problem of cleanup that wasn't anticipated.
So are you saying that it almost sounds like a little catch-22, if there are especially sloppy about the environment, that it's more likely that base would stay open because they don't want to incur the cost of cleaning it up afterward?
Well, in a close race with the other factors that could play in, but you're right. You know, the big depots, for example, have disposed of lots of chemicals in the 60s and 70s in ways that are no longer legal, but were legal then. And in some cases, the sites were simply lost. And so underneath the runway or under the golf course, you find, in some cases, lots and lots of highly toxic chemicals.
Mm-hmm. 1-877-962-9862 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation. Here's a question. Other states, I believe, Jay, you've written about this, have gone to great extents to keep military operations going. In some cases, even buying the land and leasing it back to the military just to keep it in town. In San Antonio?
Yeah. San Antonio used help from state and federal government to buy Brooks Air Force Base outright, 1,300 acres of it, and now pays the base's utility bills. The city leases most of the buildings back to the military, which saves the Air Force apparently about $7 million annually. Mississippi started a fund for local governments, local communities to borrow up to $300 million a year to protect military bases. Perhaps that's some measure of how threatened they feel, and perhaps the amount the state spent here, you know, one of the biggest things they've done is they set up $20 million bond fund to purchase land to make greater easements around the bases for training buffers. That might be a measure of how little they feel threatened here.
Mm-hmm, indeed. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment about possible military base closures in North Carolina and what North Carolina is doing to fend that off and what other states are doing. And we welcome your calls. The number's 1-877-962-9862, 1-877-962-9862. We'll continue the conversation with David Sorensen and Jay Price in just a moment. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. We're talking this hour about BRAC, the BRAC process. BRAC stands for Base Realignments and Closures. In other words, we'll be hearing in a couple of days which military operations in the country the Pentagon suggests shutting down. North Carolina has a number of military bases, and there is some trepidation about whether any of those suggested closures would be in the state. With us are David Sorensen, who is author of Shutting Down the Cold War, The Politics of Military Base Closures, and Jay Price, a reporter for the Raleigh News and Observer who covers military issues quite a lot. And we are welcoming your calls this hour. The number's 1-877-962-9862, 1-877-962-9862. Do you think, as is being presented, that this process is going to be free of politics, that it's an objective process, or will politics come in to play? And what do you think of what North Carolina has done so far in presenting its case to the Pentagon to keep all these bases open? 1-877-962-9862 is our number. One of the reasons the Pentagon says that it wants to further close bases is to consolidate the military. And there's this term that comes up, and I'm hoping we can get some clarity on that. It is said that the Pentagon wants to improve jointness. And I'm wondering, Jay Price or David Sorensen, if you can give us some clarity on exactly what it is talking about here. Jay? Or Jay first and then Dave?
The short answer is no, I can't. The Pentagon seems to struggle to define that. It's kind of loosely based on the notion that the forces, you know, need to work together more closely and act as if they're one unit, because in the field they do. I've been embedded with the 82nd Airborne a couple of times, and they inevitably have Air Force personnel with them, which helps. The Air Force personnel are dealing with the close air support, calling in airstrikes, kind of dealing with traffic overhead and so forth. And, you know, that's helped rather than have Army controllers doing that. But it's very difficult. The cultures in the different services are different. The bases are in different places, which is one of the things they're going to sounds like, try to deal with a little bit here. But it's a very, very difficult thing to define when you have very distinct services with different cultures.
Mm-hmm. David Sorensen?
Well, Jay's right. The culture that you grow up in once you join the military is the identity of your uniform and your service. And even though we've emphasized jointness and we're getting a lot better at it than we were 20 years ago, there's still that sense of service identity. The real issue is that these services run the bases. We have naval air stations, army forts, and so forth. And the question really is, can we take these bases and make them more joint, or are they doing joint things now? So, for example, in North Carolina, Pope Air Force Base supports the activities at Fort Bragg. And so, again, as Jay said, the Army and the Air Force have to work together in transporting the Army out of Fort Bragg and other forts to the locations it needs to go to. In other cases, though, Seymour Johnson, for example, it's really an Air Force base with an Air Force fighter wing and a reserve tanker wing, and there's not a lot of other service presence there. Now, whether or not that's going to be a factor in closure, we need to be careful about speculation, but that's one of the things that the Secretary's looking at, is to try to get the services to work better together and to share more things rather than developing separate bombing ranges, separate test facilities, separate weapons programs, and so forth.
And they are talking about doing that in eastern North Carolina as part of this. We are talking about BRAC, the Base Realignment and Closure Process, and the possibility of communities in North Carolina that could be affected by such closures. Joining us now is Pat Coleman. She is editor of the Havelock News, which, of course, is right at Cherry Point, next to Cherry Point, the base that is being talked about as potentially being vulnerable. Hi there, Pat Coleman.
Hi.
Hi. Well, what's the atmosphere in Havelock as we approach Friday when the list of base closures is to be announced?
As the president of Allies for Cherry Points Tomorrow, the organization that has mounted an effort to illustrate how Cherry Point fits into the bigger picture, put it yesterday, he felt as if he was in the waiting room of waiting for the birth of a child. It's very tense. We know that it can go in any direction, and there are a number of people who believe that Cherry Point could benefit by taking on more of the joint activities that have been discussed. But I think the biggest concern is about the Naval Air Depot, because there are other depots in the country that may or may not be able to assume those same functions. Mm-hmm. So most of the concern is for the future of the depot.
Because when we talk about military bases being closed, we talk perhaps about the areas around it, the economies being
right.
affected, but the depot directly employs 4,000 civilians.
That's correct.
Yeah. How much does the town of Havelock depend on the base being there and the depot being there?
I don't believe the town of Havelock would exist without the base and the depot. It built up around this base as this base developed over the years. I think it depends entirely on the base in one way or another for its existence.
Hmm. Is there no one there that might be happy that they would hear fewer fighter jets swooping in?
I think that most people moved to Havelock with the knowledge that the base existed, and in one way or the other, even the retirees who use the base for the commissary, the PX, and the medical facilities know when they come here that the sound of jets is part of living in Havelock.
Right. Well, you know, there is news from the Washington Daily News was reporting today that a citizens group up in the Chesapeake Bay area, in the Norfolk area, who live around the OLF, the outlying landing field there, they are actually petitioning the Pentagon in this process to move squadrons of the Super Hornets from there, so therefore the OLF there would not be used, and saying, well, let the squadrons go to Cherry Point.
Cherry Point was designated to get squadrons of Super Hornets when Cecil Field was closed in the 1993 BRAC, but in 1995 they went to Oceana, and there's a feeling that those jets could be moved to Cherry Point, and everyone here seems to think that they'd be happy to see them.
Right, because the OLF is one issue, and that's that a landing field doesn't provide as many jobs, but a squadron coming to town means a lot more jobs.
Yes, it does.
Right.
And 10 squadrons or 18 squadrons would be an incredible boost for this area.
Okay. So what's the sense there in Havelock of the effort the state has been making, both the state leaders and leaders in Washington for representing the state? about keeping the bases open?
What I'm hearing is that they are confident in the efforts that have been made thus far. And one of the biggest ones is in the top right criteria, we've got protection of the land around the base. And there's been a positive response to the Clean Water Management Trust Fund and the various efforts that the state has made to allocate monies to protect land around bases.
Mm-hmm. So that land, as we described earlier, would not be developed, and therefore there wouldn't be people coming in who would complain about noise and so forth. Well, Pat Coleman, thank you so much for talking with us.
Certainly. Thank you for having me.
Pat Coleman is editor of the Havelock News near Cherry Point Marine Air Station and the Naval Air Depot at Cherry Point. We welcome your calls. The number is 1-877-962-9862. Mike is in Winston-Salem. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi. I'm from Winston-Salem. Thanks for taking my question. And actually, your comments regarding Havelock in that area. My father was a Marine Corps pilot stationed at Cherry Point for a while. He was actually an instructor there. A beautiful area. I drive through there fairly often because I spend a lot of time on the coast. And the area really hasn't changed from the 50s when it was dependent upon the military, and you'd think they could have evolved to a little bit of wider scope since then.
What do you mean by wider scope there?
Well, you can only use the excuse we're dependent upon the military for so long. There's other things that are happening in the world. When you go to that area on the Neuse River, it's phenomenally beautiful. It's a waterside area. It's a gateway to the Atlantic Ocean. From a standpoint of tourism, of development, of other things to do besides watch planes take off and land and maintain them, the area probably wouldn't suffer that much if the base closed, which brings me to my point. We've suffered these problems before. When bases close, the military picks up their tent stakes and leaves, and then the local community and the state is forced to seek money from wherever they can get it to try to clean up oftentimes a huge environmental mess, years upon years of things just being dumped or stacked or left to rot and rust in the fields. Why doesn't the military begin to take a more active role in conjunction with the local communities to try to become better stewards of their home place and really start teaching the people in the military what it's like to have to be responsible to the rest of the world when you get outside the base?
Well, I'd like to put that first to David Sorensen, then to Jay Price. David Sorensen, if I hear Mike correctly there, is there anything in this process that says to the military, okay, if you close this base, this installation, you've got to clean it up?
Absolutely. The military is responsible for cleaning up the environmental pollution. The real problems are, and Mike makes a good point, the military has become much more careful over the last 20, 25 years in following and, in fact, exceeding environmental specifications. The problems go back again to the 50s and 60s when you could dispose of some pretty nasty things without following environmental regulations of today. But the reality is that every military base goes through an inspection. We poke holes in the ground, seeking lots of stuff that we've lost records of. And when we find it, we're required to clean it up. That's one of the things that a base commander can go to jail for, is violating environmental standards. And they're very harsh about it. We spend a lot of effort currently cleaning up our bases today. We don't just leave it behind.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jay Price, another part of what Mike was saying there was that this is an area, a part of the state that it could be very valuable for other purposes.
Yeah, it's an area of intense beauty. I spend a lot of time on the water down there in both of those large rivers in that area, the Neuse River and the Pamlico. And they're really kind of unknown gems to folks in the rest of the country. And they have the beauty of the place has prompted several companies to start retirement communities down there. And there's you know, something to be said for that, but it's hardly going to replace one of these military bases, at least very quickly. You know, there's talk of, okay, if one of them shuts down, we may start an industrial park. Well, it's easy to say that, but we've been trying to get industrial things going in the northeast corner of the state for a long time with not a lot of success. And you can look at places like Edenton and further inland. Edenton's a beautiful place, but not a lot going on there.
Mm-hmm. Because there's one business, which is real estate and getting people to come, but is it the recurring income and recurring jobs that you'd get from having the Naval Depot that you have at Cherry Point right now?
Yeah, yeah. And to be fair, you know, they're on a good highway there. Northeast has a problem with transportation corridor, too. But it again, would be really difficult to replace these things.
1-877-962-9862. Malcolm is in Kernersville. Hi there, Malcolm.
Hello.
Greetings. Did you have a question for our guests?
Yes, I do. I actually have a couple of comments, too, though. First, I thank you guys for taking me on my call, but when you spoke on Cherry Point and those types of areas, to him, as a retired Marine, my concept of all of that is when a husband and wife conceive a child, do they not expect the baby to cry? You know, you move into an area where there is a military base, where there are planes, where there are tanks, where there's training. You those are some of the inherent things you've got to expect. But the flip side to it is a lot of probably the reason that they're closing or desiring to close a lot of these bases boils down to the simple fact of manpower. Why would you keep – I grew up in Goldsboro in the home of Seymour Johnson. If you're having a drop-off in recruitment manpower – and the kids of today don't desire to join the military because their parents are saying it's not a good place. And as we're seeing these wars and things happening, they don't want to join. You can't afford to keep these bases open. And the jobs that are associated with these bases that the people do rely on, if you think back to when the Gulf War first started and the town of Jacksonville, North Carolina, sought to sue the government for taking the military people out of the town because of the financial loss to the city. I mean, those are things that you got to look at that and then wonder if the town depends on it and we as free Americans thrive on the freedom that we've gotten from the military people, then why won't people join to serve for what they say they believe in and support the strength in the military?
So you're making a pitch for recruitment there.
Well, most definitely. You can't. What good is a military? You've got reservists out the wazoo, and that's good. But a reservist is at home Monday through Friday, 300 days out of the year, and he's spending about 60 days training for what is really a full-time opportunity that we do need people for.
Okay. Well, I'd like to talk to David Sorensen a bit about this because Malcolm raises that issue of the recruitment that we've been hearing in the news so much lately of recruitment is falling off at a time when the country's in a war. So if you have fewer servicemen, servicewomen, Marines, Army, Navy who are signing up, does that also make the case for shutting down even more bases?
I don't think we're at the point now in our military numbers that justify closing bases simply because we have fewer people to put on them. The real thing, and Malcolm, I think, alluded to this, is saving money. We estimate that we will save $6 to $7 billion a year by closing the bases. Now, again, that was the original estimate from the Secretary before he has now apparently indicated that only half his estimate would close. But even if you save $3 to $4 billion a year, that doesn't seem like a lot in a $400 billion defense budget. But given the size of the deficit and the other missions, and quite frankly, the point that we're ultimately going to have to start paying our recruits more money if we want them to join, that may be a sad factor in that they don't join necessarily for as patriotic reasons as they used to in earlier days. We still have to pay them competitive wages. And if we can save even a little bit from base closure to help improve the size and the effectiveness of our military, the military thinks it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Well, one final question before we go for you, Jay Price. This process has been more closed than past base closures. I mean, there's not been as much scuttlebutt leaking of what might be closed or not. Do you have any sense as to whether North Carolina bases and operations will dodge the bullet again here?
Well, you know, again, the state government didn't just give away the whole farm here, trying to, you know, throw every cent that it had, trying to protect that. And I guess that's our best sign here, although they don't have really a heck of a lot more information than anyone else has. You know, they're getting some feedback. But, you know, I would think that that's our best indicator.
Okay. All right. And we will see how this plays out in coming days. It could be as early as Friday that we will hear, and then it'll go to a 9-member commission. There could be a series of hearings, and then it goes to the president's desk in September, and he has 2 weeks to say whether he accepts those or not, and then it goes on to Congress. The story's going to be in play for quite a while. We'll be covering that. We'd like to thank you all for joining us today. David Sorensen's professor at the Air College in Alabama and author of Shutting Down the Cold War, The Politics of Military Base Closures. Thanks for being back with us, David Sorensen.
Thank you.
And Jay Price is a reporter for the Raleigh News and Observer. Thanks for coming back again, Jay.
Thanks.
And for today, that's the state of things. Our program is directed by Keith Weston and edited by Dave DeWitt. Corey Princell and Jordana Gustafson produced the show. Robin Copley is the technical director. Susan Davis is the senior producer. And Fred Wasser is the executive producer. Support for the state of things comes from listeners who support North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.